Yes, it's Rake the Moon episode 15. The curse of a small patch of semi-industrialized land just off the A12 near Ipswich. We'll go through that game. It's a promotion with the hope of a promotion. Cut prices for Accrington, along with supporters' trust ideas, for tickets for those who are finding making their ends meet hard. Can we take it all to the bank? Plus early kickoffs and the injury list that has the treatment room looking like Aintree's at about 4:15. All part of this week's Rake the Moon. But before all that, if you can stand it, the banter section, and after everything that went on Friday night, I thought for this week, Sam, I would ask you, what small things make you irrationally mad? I have a slight thing, and I should say I am not someone who succumbs to road rage, but you know when you stop your car because one part of the road is blocked and the other person comes through, if I don't get waved at, or if I don't wave, that there's something about that gets under my skin just a little bit. I'm looking for those levels of sort of micro irritation that probably aren't justified.
My mind immediately went to driving as well. That's interesting, but not quite the same. Mine was more when you get stuck behind someone who drives at 40 miles an hour, regardless of where they are. So if they're in a 60, it's 40, a 50, it's 40, a 30, it's 40, it's 20, it's 40. It just doesn't matter. They just drive at the same speed, and often you're stuck behind them for mile after mile, just not understanding what's going through their heads. Yeah, that gets me quite a lot. Other minor irritations, probably. I think everyone, when they live with someone else, they have minor gripes. My wife leaves the bottle tops for milk just hanging around on the side after they've been opened. That really annoys me. But I'm sure that she has plenty of things that I annoy her with as well. Andrew, I could go on and on. So many things annoy me. I'm constantly annoyed. So you could have a whole podcast, a very, very dull podcast, of me mouthing off about tiny micro annoyances in my life.
Low stakes fury for everyone, but at least it's in the path of first world problems, I guess, which is kind of nice. But yes, I think we all have those kind of occasional things that just sort of wind us up a little bit more than they probably should, given the nature of the offence. Speaking of things that we find vaguely offensive, we better do this. Colchester v Swindon. So I'm interested, Sam, with your view from a distance hat on and watching off the box. How was that game for you?
I think we all shared a similar view of it in that it was incredibly disappointing, and in the circumstances, I think everybody expected more. We can all have differences of opinion as to what exactly went wrong. You know, was it selection? Was it the red card? Was the red card justified? Was it the way that Swindon set up? Did Colchester play well or not? There's lots of different perspectives, but I think ultimately Swindon was so flat generally that it just made it such an anticlimax. And even worse, it's the sort of anticlimax that I think a lot of us expected because it's Colchester away. Just that there is very little that you go with to a game like that, or you turn the telly on expecting for a game away at Colchester, and it just ticked all the boxes we expected, which are all negative boxes. So whilst entirely expected, it's also incredibly frustrating given how much was on the line last weekend and how close they could have got to really pushing the top three over the final 3 weeks of the season. So, I think frustration and disappointment is the biggest emotion at the end of it. But we can discuss, you know, the various factors that led to the performance, I guess, which different people have different opinions on.
Without wishing to labour the point, I feel like we may have done this last week, or whether it was in private correspondence, or whether it's among all the not very extensive Swindon Town reporting journalistic pack. None of us particularly have any fondness for going there for distance, atmosphere, and so on. Though I do have to always put this with the caveat, like the people there are always perfectly nice, arguably slightly nicer than average yet. Some of it must be the result. I do wonder how easy it is to kind of get energized for a game there. I mean, Colchester have to do it 23 times a season, which must be tough enough. But you can't excuse that given the stakes. But it's not a place to sort of lift the spirits when you come there. But that's kind of not the point, really. If you're a professional footballer, you're meant to be able to put in a level of performance, whether you've got like 60 people watching a reserve game, really, or an alleged 4,800. Though I can't say that place looked half full to me. There on a Friday night, so there is something about the venue, but that can't really justify Swindon's curious record there. I mean, I think Colchester did the double over them in the Richie Wellens promotion season, so. All we can hope is that Colchester won the battles and Swindon win the war, I guess, in longer term. You may have got the benefit of some sort of looks and replays of the James Ball red card. So with the advantage, albeit, of two cameras there rather than one set of eyes, what did you think?
Well, I didn't think that it was a red card. I didn't think that he connected in a way that was dangerous. There is an argument he's jumped into the tackle, but it's not two-footed as he jumps. He jumps with one foot and follows with a swinging leg. He's not connected with the man, and his leg is planted when the other leg comes through. It's not a good tackle. My argument would be that he's being sent off for intent, and if that's the case, then there'll be a dozen of those a weekend that should also be red carded. Although I'm sure there will be a letter of the law somewhere that will say it, to me that felt entirely unreasonable for the circumstance. I don't think it was as bad a tackle as it looked initially, though it wasn't a good tackle, and it obviously was a yellow card. I think that there is certainly some debate there. I wouldn't think that the Swindon would win an appeal if they appealed it. I don't think that there's enough in the other direction to say that it was a dreadful, dreadful decision. I just think that it was a bit tame. Whether or not it impacted the game as a whole, I'm not sure. I'm not entirely convinced, though. They did seem to have managed the first 20 minutes at that point. They just started to gain a bit of possession, and it had started to even out as a contest after the first 20 minutes, which were obviously all Colchester. So there is a slight argument that it would have impacted the rhythm, but Swindon didn't create anything throughout the game anyway. So I don't know whether we can say with any real conviction that it was a game-changing moment. But what it doesn't do is help with availability for the next three games either, because James Ball will be banned for them. So, from your vantage point, I guess... you would have only seen it once on the night, and it probably looked pretty reckless at the time. So what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I think there's a bit of a kind of ooh factor when you see the challenge go in. It's just sort of once, and we're kind of quite low down, but I did get kind of reasonable view of it. I'll say the referee didn't give himself very much thinking time, I suppose, is the one thing you might point of the red came out very, very quickly. Indeed. I mean, there was some sort of level of anger from the Colchester players, but I don't think it was the kind of anger from them that, you know, when you have those clearly, those challenges that will clearly be defined as reckless in the rules. So I suppose if the orange card existed, you kind of feel maybe like it would sort of go there. Swindon were sort of tiptoeing their way back into the game, because you do have to say Colchester were pretty good for 15 or 20 minutes. It seems to be a thing I'm hearing a lot of at the moment. You go in at half time, and there's someone from Colchester saying, "Oh, that's one of the best halves we've had all season," which, in one way, is that coincidental or not? I suppose. But I think when you've got to play so long with the red, it just sort of saps you. You can maybe sort of do 15, 20 minutes, half an hour without one. But I think eventually it wears you down, especially against one of League Two's sort of better possession sides. But everything just kind of sunk without trace, bar possibly Connor Ripley's ability to keep a ball out of a net, and even that was breached a fair number of times.
It's interesting though, isn't it? Because if that had happened in a home game, or if that had happened in some away games, you probably would have expected Swindon still to have made an effort about it, like to have taken them pretty close. My personal feeling as soon as the red card came out was, well, that's that done. They've lost this game, 100%. And that, again, maybe it's something about Colchester. Maybe it's something about matches on a Friday night. I don't know. But it was just, there's something about that place that there's always something that goes wrong. And as soon as the first thing goes wrong, you know that just a series of things are going to go wrong after that.
No, I suppose I had a slight hope when they got to half time and it was still 0-0. And, you know, the first goes in and you're probably like, this is done. But I think everything seemed to fold after the second. And you know, I'd never say players weren't trying or had given up, but you got that sort of sense that they kind of knew once it was two that there probably wasn't a way back into it, and that almost kind of got acknowledged with the subs, you know, taking Dryden off late to, you know, save 15 minutes in his legs, which I think was an entirely sensible decision, I have to point out. But why in particular it unfolded as badly as it did? It just does feel like there is a, you know, you need Barry Fry to go and find a way to magically cure a curse, look it up, as it were, or something like that. Because there's something about Swindon, that place, that does not appear to go together. It's, I know they haven't won at Gillingham since the 80s, but there's always been quite a few draws at Gillingham and things like that, not necessarily kind of terrible performances.
They got promoted at Gillingham.
So yeah,
there are positive memories in other places, and it's very hard to pick real positive memories out of trips to, particularly to that stadium. And you know, there are, if you go back further, the trips to Lair Road, there's probably a few more better away days, but just something about the whatever it's called community stadium and its four open ends and its press box that allows rain to go straight into your laptop, and the fact it takes 6 hours to get there and it's on a completely lacking of character industrial park. It's a big block of concrete that hasn't been made into something of any kind of atmosphere. I hate it.
Yeah, well, I think there's something very interesting in the fact that basically Chesterfield Stadium is the same, and yet that's still kind of in town, and that's actually quite vibrant despite the design when you go there. I mean, I think that's one of the best atmospheres we've probably experienced away for most of the season, because even when they went 1-0 down early, it was still like, there still feels like quite a lot of good energy then from coming into the league, getting into the playoffs and so on, whereas Colchester just doesn't have it. And
I bet coming the other way, that Colchester fans and other fans come to the county ground at the moment and say, what's the atmosphere? Where is it?
And they probably say, quiet? Yeah, and they probably say, what's the price first? And then like,
where are all the fans in the home end? Why don't you have a home end anymore? What's going on?
Yeah. Maybe there are always hidden stories there, but you know, I think Colchester are always designed to perpetually battle the fact that Ipswich is about 15 miles up the road.
Yeah.
And we'll see if John Terry can make a success of it, or whether he just wants to coach his nephew and he's got nothing better to do, I suppose. So we must cast that club in Essex to the winds for the time being and focus on the future, which is Accrington, which fans can, you know, see at knockdown prices for once, really, with the decision to open the Stratton Bank for this game. Accrington won't be selling out their initial away allocation, of that we can certainly be confident. So, you know, they are trying to get some posteriors on seats, bring a bit of energy to the ground at a reasonable price. So, I think we have to say, good to see them trying something, do we not?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I know that people have picked up on the fact that it's relatively late in the season and that there have been few ticket offers elsewhere. But still, if the club do something that the fans have been asking for, you know, we have to be fair enough to say that's good. You know, £10 a ticket is a good promotional price to try and get people in. It coincides with the Trust's ticket bank, which means that more tickets might be available, might be affordable for fans to give more tickets to that so more people can go and watch it. I don't think that it deserves a great deal of criticism at all. And it's a net positive. I think there's been some confusion as to why they've chosen to open the bank for this particular game, given that it's a fairly low key in terms of the opposition. And the primary reason here is that they were already opening the bank to give a block of tickets to people who participate in a Prospect Hospice charity walk, which finishes at the ground ahead of the match. So that part of the stadium was already going to be open for that. Given that they've opened it, it does sort of make sense that they try to monetize it a bit as well. And the fact that they've slashed the prices obviously represents the both a willingness to engage an audience, but also the fact that the facilities down that end and the view to some extent are not of the same sort of level that you would expect elsewhere. So it makes sense. I think that this was ready last week. Maybe they could have helped themselves by getting out before a trip to Colchester, so that the views of fans wouldn't be slightly tainted by what happened on Friday night. But in general, I think it's a net positive, and it does show at least an inclination to do a bit of a promotion. Off the top of my head, there's been a kid for a quid and one other reduction over the course of the season, I think, that I can remember. Clubs, contrary to some of what the club has said, there is no limit from the EFL on the number of ticket promotions that a club can do in a single season. I spent a long time establishing this with the EFL. There is a limitation on the number of games that can be included within a single ticket promotion, and opposition supporters or opposition clubs have to be consulted within ticket promotions and sort of their sign off, etc. But there's no limit to the number of times that you can offer a promotion. So it is possible that the club could do more, and maybe if they see a big pickup from it this season, they will do more, because by giving a discount to entry, it does lower that barrier to bringing people in. And hopefully, if they can then get a performance on the pitch, then they can turn those casual viewers into more regulars. And that's, you know, it's a standard funnel process in a commercial enterprise, and it makes sense for them to do it. So I applaud them for doing it. I would encourage them to do it more next year. And I would encourage any supporters that want to give things a go to take up the club on this opportunity for a tenner. It is, I think, very reasonable value for a League Two promotion chasing game. And hopefully that the ground can get a little bit busier than it otherwise would be for Accrington at 12:30, which by itself does not inspire the motivation that you might want for really what is a massive game. Swindon have got to win their last three matches and hope that results go elsewhere in their favour. So getting up for this with a big crowd would help, but I don't think we would otherwise expect a big crowd. So I don't know about you, Andrew, but largely I think this ticks a lot of boxes.
Yeah, it seems worth trying, especially under the circumstances almost of having had that heavy defeat as well. Here we go. Here's something we can give back to some extent, and you can enjoy the game at discount. Yeah, I don't think there have been enough promotions at this point that you could really see any sort of trade-off between anger from your season ticket holders and you know, the fact, oh well, there's cheap seats again, you know. I guess that's one sort of unwritten factor that bends into how many promotions you can do. But yeah, it does feel important to state that it always felt like historically, I think at least there was a limit on what you could do in terms of promotion. But it's be as creative as you want, as long as you can carry the public with you, which the club occasionally do find a challenge to do. And we should say, I think, give a word to the Trust's idea of the ticket bank, where you can kind of offer, I think, to help people who are struggling financially to go. You can kind of nominate them to get tickets, which especially in the current financial and inflationary climate seems a more than reasonable idea, as long as people play fair with it.
Yeah, absolutely. It does give some level of trust that people are going to properly represent their own personal circumstances. But from what I'm told, it's been a very positive pickup, both from fans being willing to pay for tickets for others, and there's also been a good level of interest from those trying to take advantage of the opportunity. So much so that the initiative is oversubscribed, i.e. there's a shortfall between the number of those who have promised tickets and the number of people who have requested it. So the Moonraker is going to fund the shortfall to cover anyone who wants that ticket. Hopefully that means that they can make a big impact with this first round, and I know that the trust will want to try and do something similar in the future to allow people who are not in a position to go to football to not be worried about the financial impact of it, and particularly for young families to get them and their children out and enjoying a really crucial part of the community. So fair play to the trust. They've done really well with that. Again, now with the opportunity for £10 tickets to come into it, if others want to give to allow more people to come, it's more affordable to give as well. So yeah, it's a great initiative. It's a community project, and I'm all for it.
And yeah, if sorry, let me say something pithy after that, just to wind things up. So you're always having to edit me, and if a club is not part of its community, then in some senses, what is it really for? So finally, to the treatment table. Although given the size of it, metaphorically, this could be almost the longest segment of the podcast, really. Ryan Tafazoli, we now know, has been diagnosed with a broken elbow, which seems pretty serious to me. Although if you judge by his Twitter, he seems perhaps less concerned than the broad swathe of humanity. James Ball is not injured, but obviously has enforced absence for this now. Swindon are sort of slowly starting to run out of bodies, and especially when I'm ploughing through the list of central defensive options here. So we have Knight, Lebel, Mbete, Wright, and maybe at a push, Ollie Clark, it feels like, as the centre back options at this point, unless we suddenly start moving Aaron Joynen back there, which feels a little bit unlikely, I'd have to say. Firstly, before we move into midfield and Gavin Kilkenny, that defence, I'm really now is looking stretched for these last few games.
Yeah, I guess there's Billy Kirkman as well, that you could play as a centre back, and obviously in a three, you definitely can play him as a centre back. But there's not a great deal else. Tom Wilson-Brown is the other one that people will shout about. I mean, my impression was many weeks ago that Swindon were preparing not to get him back this season, and there's not been really any indication since, bar one off-the-cuff comment by Ian Holloway in a press conference, that that would be likely to change. So I think that there is definitely a situation here where Holloway might need to trust Phil Mbete again, which I know would be something that a lot of the supporters would take well. The real issue they have at the moment is how bad is this fracture in this elbow, and is the specialist going to say, "That's it, you've got the typical 6 weeks out to allow that to heal." You can get by, I guess, as a footballer with playing with certain supports, etc., depending on the severity and the nature of a fracture in that part of the body. Tafazoli's obviously gone on social media and said that he doesn't need it, which is a very bold and very brave statement. But there is still the worry, if you've already fractured it and you land awkwardly and it gets worse, and you do it early in a game, and that makes an enforced change early on, or you have to shift shape or whatever, and it can completely throw a game plan out the window. So the club will need to be confident that he can get through games without too much concern. I would expect him at least not to be featuring this weekend, and then see where things go beyond that. But that'll be the club's decision ultimately to make. But yeah, it does feel a bit a bit skinny, and with one more, either a suspension or an injury, and it's really quite thin, which is not brilliant. I guess when it comes to playoff football, do the defences usually win playoff football matches? It's usually the attacks, and it's usually the people who are willing to be a little bit more daring. And I would suspect that if Swindon are going to get through these playoffs, they're going to need to be free scoring rather than miserly. So I'm not so fussed about that part of it, but certainly just to get the final 1 to 3 points needed to confirm this playoff place, which is ridiculously dragging at the moment, it would be good to have somebody back. And it does feel very, very thin on the ground at the moment.
I suppose I'm just thinking, because we know how the manager loves talking about communication and experience, I can't see him picking a Knight, LaBelle and Mbete four-man defence, because then you'd have McGregor, Mbete, Knight, LaBelle and Batty, and that seems incredibly light on levels of experience and communication. Yet Will Wright is not in great form, so I do wonder whether he might almost end up playing three at the back against Accrington by some kind of default, really, because he might want Wright in there as the nominal leader of an otherwise very inexperienced defence. So, that thought just struck.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. Or Ollie Clark playing on the left hand
side. Yeah, it's just whether Clark can do the 90 minutes at this point, I think. So.
Yeah, and who knows? It does feel like the squad is strapped together with sellotape at the moment and just trying to get through, which is why, though, it goes to the other side. I think he's got to focus on going forward, get that creativity back firing, and try and get in a position where they're in front rather than always chasing. But I think we're all feeling a bit exhausted, including the squad at the moment. The season is dragging and it's having an impact both physically with the players and emotionally with just about everybody. So if it could just hurry up and get to the playoffs now, and if these three games could just be emerged through, because I think it's highly unlikely that they get knocked out of the top seven at this point, even with a couple of bad results. I think one point will probably do it. Just get through to the playoffs and let's try and have a second wind, or whatever it is, might be fifth wind by that point, to try and get through it. But there's also the in midfield, which you mentioned too, with Gav Kilkenny, which is a significant miss at the moment. And Swindon they're just not quite the same without him, even if he hasn't been as good since he's signing his new contract, ironically. But midfield without him and without Ollie Clark, either because Clark has to play in defence or because he's not fit enough to start, it starts to lose a lot of its verve, a lot of its energy. And they really need that verve and energy for the playoffs. So I am a little bit worried about how the remaining elements of the squad bolt together to give them that buzz that they need to find a way, which they've been so good at over the course of the last year and a half.
Yeah, it feels like the challenge is replicating the forward-thinking Clark who gets into the box, because it's almost as if James Ball has been trying to do that for a couple of games, going back to his free-scoring days for Solihull Moors in the National League. But obviously that is a option that's not available to him. I don't think we've really seen Ballen do that. I'm not sure. It seems odd for a former striker. I'm not sure we've really kind of seen Tom Nicholls make those sort of runs into the box. Perhaps his instincts have been honed over so many years to, you know, sort of be in the box for when the ball arrives, rather than those kind of late things. So that feels like a quality that they're going to have to dig out from somewhere, whether they could track Snowden back, because, you know, he's played number 10, or whether they do turn back to James Scanlon, which they seem fairly unwilling to do at the moment, or maybe they'll play Billy Boat in there. Who knows? But I just feel like I'm grabbing a lot of pegs and desperately trying to put them in the appropriate holes. It's not easy given the numbers that are out and the balance on that.
I think the team moves much more slowly through transition without Ollie Clark. I think that the lineup that Holloway needs to use a back four, but without Clark in midfield, means that the three supporting Arendrinan are often much more sedate in their natural movement. They're all quality players, but often there isn't the same sort of explosive energy. And there isn't a player like Clark who can offer what he does in terms of late runs into the box, in terms of haranguing opposition midfields in the squad. He is a unique player, and that obviously has been highlighted by a lot of people as potentially a recruitment flaw over the course of the season. But because it's not replicable, it really does depend on this, on his state, his physical condition, as to what Swindon can and can't do. And this is why I think Holloway has generally been holding out for the impact of Michael Olakigbe and Fletcher Holman from the bench, is because they do have the ability to change a game in the final half hour, and that does add a different dynamic. If you start with that, they have much more defensive responsibility early on in games, and I don't think that he's sold on their ability to act in the defensive manner that he would expect from a wing back slash wide forward. So I understand why he's been doing it, but it does lead itself to a much slower first 45 to 60 minutes, which obviously impacts on the general sense amongst the supporters, and can lead to them finding themselves in difficult positions, as they've managed to recover from and not recover from over the course of the season. But without Clark and without Tafazoli, if that comes to pass too, and without Kilkenny, it's going to take a big effort from the team going forwards. I still think that we'll see a fair bit of Clark, possibly of Tafazoli as well. So all is not yet lost, but you can understand at the moment why Swindon fans are looking at it and going, oh dear.
Yes, I think I'm going to be rubbing my elbow with four-leaf clovers or trying to provide some sort of magical method of Tafazoli assimilation back into the side as quickly as possible. I did mention it very quickly at the top. We're now into the 12:30 kickoffs, thanks to the TV deal, which we probably ought to explore more, I think, in a future podcast. There are plenty of them, but I still don't think they carry the energy of 3 p.m. games by and large, which, you know, the kind of the fans and the players, I think, need after what happened on Friday.
Yeah, it's funny. I clocked it the last time that there was a 12:30 at the County Ground, and I had to stop early in the morning and actually calculate when I should be leaving, etc. Whereas for 3 p.m.s, it's all just in you. It's just muscle memory. And I think that plays a big part in everything to do with 12:30 kickoffs. And the Football League has started to experience more of it, was particularly lower down the Football League in the last couple of years. And we're now starting to understand what the Premier League and Championship support groups have been moaning about for so long. It's really not as easy to be up for it as a supporter base at that time of day. It generally appears as though it's not easy to sell for the club, apart from obviously the Bristol Rovers game, but that game wasn't moved for TV anyway. So I think that in most senses, I can't really speak for the preparation of the players. You would expect that to be okay. I mean, they're used to playing at different times of day. But in terms of preparation of the fans, I think it's got a negative to the overall product and the overall atmosphere. I still need to do some work, I think, on what the commercial situation is at the end of it, whether it is a net benefit to the club commercially, because obviously they get a lot more money than they were getting from iFollow, and whether they would have sold the equivalent in tickets that they didn't sell as a result of the games being on telly would be an interesting balance. But from a football perspective, from a spectacle perspective, from a fan perspective, there's just something about them that dulls the whole atmosphere. So I'm glad this is the last one at the County Ground this season, but I feel for you for the following week, Andrew, for having to get there. I don't know what time you're going to have to set your alarm on the 25th, but
let us not discuss that. But yeah, I feel like those Saturday lunchtimes, be at home or away, never feel quite the same. I don't know whether it's as simple as the quantity of alcohol ingested. I'm sure it's more sophisticated than that. And let us not dwell on becoming the Thursday night Europa League spoiler from time to time. That's arguably even worse. Okay, enough moaning, enough venting. Cheer yourself up by subscribing to the Moonraker for the knockdown price of just £5 a month. And as you've heard, Sam is helping out with the whole ticket bank project with some of the funds generated, or £50 a year for all those features, reports, analysis, and the kind of takes that you've heard in the past half hour or so. Thank you for listening, as always, and we'll see what Accrington Stanley bring at the weekend.